I've seen it. I've read some of it, and it's fine. I don't believe it.
It's his own report, and he doesn't believe it.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling there's something right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, that's heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, in Cottage Grove on Queso, in Eugene on KEPW, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, Columbus, Ohio's WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, in Grand Rapids, Michigan on WPRR, in New Orleans on WHIV, Gallup, New Mexico's KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, Seattle's KODX, Red Bluff and Redding, California's KFOI, Round Mountain, California's KKRN, Eureka, California's KGOE. Hello, Eureka. And in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day for your listening convenience. On the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Workforce Rising, Deprogrammed Radio, and Detour Talk, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. I am Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. And yes, thanks to those folks up in Eureka, California on KGOE News Talk AM 1480. Delighted to be on up there 6 days a week. Tom Seaborn tells me, runs everything, I guess, up there in Eureka. So thanks, Tom, and all the good folks in Eureka. Good to be there. I hope you all, wherever you may be, had a restful and peaceful holiday weekend. Somehow, my thanks to Angie Coiro of In Deep Radio for filling in for Desi and me. Desi and I don't know.
Desi and me.
Thank you. Hi, Des. Giving us an extra day off over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Greatly appreciated, Angie. Thank you. Coming up, we will be joined live in just moments by Dr. Michael E. Mann, creator of the infamous hockey stick graph tying carbon dioxide level to ever-rising heat levels across our planet, to respond to this remarkable new report released by the Trump administration on climate change over the holiday weekend, where they hoped to bury it, hoping you would not notice. We intend to help you notice. That's in just a moment. Meantime, no, the midterm elections are not over. Several races are still being counted. There was actually a concession today. I'll try to get to that in a little bit. Runoffs are coming up, including on Tuesday in Mississippi for the U.S. Senate. We'll talk about that and much more in a bit. And maybe even get to some of your calls if you have anything that you feel was buried over the holiday weekend and needs some sunshine over our public airwaves, what we still have left of them. Write down the number. It's 818-985-5735. If you're listening live, 818-985-5735 will be our phone number if you want to line up now. And if I get some time in a bit. But let's start here. Well, along with your turkey over the Thanksgiving weekend, I hope you didn't enjoy any romaine lettuce salads. U.S. health officials last Tuesday, just before the holiday, warned Americans to toss out all romaine lettuce due to yet another outbreak of E. coli. The warning comes just months after a similar strain of E. coli contamination in romaine lettuce sickened about 200 people and killed five across the country, and on the heels of a similar outbreak, also linked to other leafy greens, that happened just last year. The deadly outbreak this past spring was found to be due to tainted irrigation water used on a number of farms with water contaminated by animal feces that was then used on the lettuce. As the investigative news outlet Reveal reported in late summer of this year, for more than a decade, it's been clear that there is a gaping hole in American food safety. Growers aren't required to test their irrigation water for pathogens such as E. coli. As a result, contaminated water can end up on fruits and vegetables. After several high-profile disease outbreaks linked to food, according to Reveal, Congress in 2011 ordered a fix. And produce growers this year would have begun testing their water under rules that were crafted by the Obama administration's Food and Drug Administration. But you'll be shocked to learn that 6 months before people were sickened by the contaminated romaine last spring, President Donald Trump's FDA, responding to pressure from the farm industry and Trump's order to eliminate regulations, shelved those water testing rules for at least 4 years. 4 years! Despite the deadly outbreak earlier this year, Reveal reported in August that the FDA had shown no sign of reconsidering its plan to postpone those rules that were put in place by the Obama administration. And Donald Trump said, nah, don't worry about it. If people get sick, oh well. If people die, oh well. The argument from produce growers who petitioned the Trump administration to postpone those requirements, it would save them $12 million a year. Just $12 million. That, even as the FDA's own analysis found that not testing for pathogens in water used to grow produce would cost consumers $108 million per year in medical expenses. $108 million for consumers, well, that's okay. But $12 million for the produce growers, that's, we got to get rid of that, no matter how many people die. So guess which side the Trump administration chose in that battle? Their push to roll back any and all Obama administration regulations is both costly and deadly to Americans. As that disaster for the industry and Americans alike played out last week, Donald Trump tweeted, quote, brutal and extended cold blast could shatter all records. Whatever happened to global warming? Yes, that was the president of the United States on Twitter. Well, had the president had any clue what was going on, apparently, in his own administration, he would have known exactly what happened to global warming. It's getting worse. And quickly, according to an alarming report released by the White House on Friday over the holiday weekend. And if you think the cost of poisoned food for Americans, if you think that is troubling, it is nothing compared to the devastating costs of man-made climate change, according to a new nearly 1,700-page report just released by, yes, wait for it, the Trump administration. A major scientific report issued by 13 federal agencies on Friday after Thanksgiving presents the starkest warnings to date of the consequences of climate change for the United States, according to the New York Times, predicting that if significant steps are not taken to rein in global warming and the damage will knock as much as 10% off the size of the American economy by century's end, slashing up to a tenth of gross domestic product by 2100, which, if you remember the Great Recession a decade or so ago, that would be more than double the losses of the Great Recession. Remember how bad that was? This will be more than twice as bad, unless something is done to take action. The report, which was mandated by Congress and made public by the White House, is notable not only for the precision of its calculations and bluntness of its conclusions, but also because its findings are directly at odds with Donald Trump's agenda of environmental deregulation, which he asserts will spur economic growth. This report by his own administration details exactly the opposite. The new climate assessment report was written long before the deadly fires in California this past month and before the hurricanes Florence and Michael raked the East Coast and Florida. The new report details how warming-charged extremes have, quote, already smashed U.S. records for damaging weather, costing nearly $400 billion since 2015. $400 billion. When asked today about the devastating economic effects of climate change as described in the report, again, released by his own administration, Trump said, yeah, he saw it, but he doesn't believe any of it.
I've seen it. I've read some of it, and it's fine.
They say economic impact is devastating.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
You don't believe it?
No, I don't believe it.
He doesn't believe it. The report, thankfully, is mandated by law every few years, which explains why the Trump administration had no choice but to release it. But they did have a choice about when to release it. It had been scheduled for release next month, but suddenly it was dropped on Black Friday while folks were out shopping for their families, with their families, for the holidays. Even the scientists who wrote the report said they had no idea that it was going to be released that day. The paper is based on more than 1,000 previous research studies and details how global warming from the burning of coal, oil, and gas is hurting each region in the U.S., how it impacts different sectors of the economy, including energy and, yes, agriculture. Annual losses in some economic sectors are projected to reach hundreds of billions of dollars by the end of the century, more than the current GDP of many U.S. states, according to the report. It finds the lower 48 states have warmed 1.8 degrees since the year 1900, with 1.2 of those degrees, Fahrenheit, we're talking about, just coming in the last few decades. By the end of the century, it warns the U.S. will be 3 to 12 degrees Fahrenheit hotter, depending on how much greenhouse gases are released into the atmosphere. Trump, administration officials, and elected Republicans who were given far more airtime over the weekend news shows to dispute the study's findings than were the scientists who actually wrote it and understand the actual science behind it, they all continued their various denialist spin that climate is always changing, but we just can't know how much of it is caused by humans, how much of it is just a natural cycle, all of that nonsense. Without greenhouse gases, natural forces such as changes in energy from the sun would be slightly cooling the Earth, according to the report. It says more than 90% of the current warming is caused by humans. There are no credible alternative human or natural explanations supported by the observational evidence, says the report. Well, that's precisely what Dr. Michael Mann on this very show has been telling us for years now, but it has been a while. So joining us now is Michael Mann. He's the creator of the now infamous hockey stick graph, showing the correlation between the increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and the recent historic rise in global temperatures. He is the distinguished professor and director of the Earth System Science Center at Pennsylvania State University, author of more than 160 peer-reviewed and edited publications and books such as The Hockey Stick and The Climate Wars, and a more recent one with political cartoonist Tom Tolles, which is great for the holidays. It's got cartoons in it, called The Madhouse Effect, How Climate Change Denial is Threatening Our Planet, Destroying Our Politics, and Driving Us Crazy, which is a very short drive. Dr. Michael Mann, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you. Great to be back with you, Brad.
So how does this new report, how does it differ from so many of these previous reports? What is essentially new here that the previous reports and that folks like you have not already been warning us about for so many years now as Donald Trump and friends ignores you?
Yeah, well, in essence, because these reports by construction are really assessments of the existing scientific literature, it's hard to be caught by surprise scientifically. The information in these reports is information that's already backed up in the peer-reviewed literature. I think what is unique about this particular report, however, is the way the science has been framed. Scientists, as you know, tend to be very conservative, very reticent in the way that they characterize their findings. My colleague Naomi Oreskes likes to call it the path of least drama. Scientists will be the least dramatic they can. They don't want to make waves. They just want to do their research, publish it, and get on with it. But here you have a group of scientists, conservative scientists, who really cannot find any way to not state our understanding, our assessment of the science, in terms that are, frankly, quite worrying. Simply stating now what the science has to say is cause for alarm. We've seen, you know, as you alluded to, the report, the findings of the report were formulated before we truly saw the impacts of climate change writ large this summer and this fall in the form of unprecedented superstorms and droughts and heat waves and wildfires. We are seeing those impacts now play out in real time. And so to have a group of fairly conservative scientists, the National Climate Assessment, these are government scientists and academic scientists who really have no particular impulse to be alarmist, but nonetheless, simply stating what the science has to say is alarming. It's alarming because we are seeing the impacts of climate change now play out in real time. That means we're much farther down this road than we ever should have allowed ourselves to get, and time is running out. There is a level of urgency unlike we've seen before. We have to bring our carbon emissions down dramatically now to avoid ever more catastrophic warming of the planet, and this is what you see in the form of scientists who are usually quite conservative coming out and saying, look, we have, in essence, an emergency now. And the emergency, as you alluded to, is heightened by the fact that at a time when we need to see even more action, we need to cooperate with the rest of the world to go beyond what's already been committed in the Paris Accord. If we're going to stabilize warming below catastrophic levels, we have a president who is trying to take us in exactly the opposite direction, literally trying to dismantle the environmental protections that were put in place during past Republican as well as Democratic administrations. And that is obviously cause for great concern, coupled with the fact that he uses the bully pulpit to spout misinformation and disinformation and ignorance when it comes to the science of climate change and its impacts.
It's particularly disturbing when you have a president of the United States, you may have heard in the intro there, you know, saying last week, just days before this thing is released, saying, well, whatever happened to global warming? It's cold outside. And then when the answer comes in a 1,700-page report, well, this is what happened to global warming, Mr. President. He then turns around and says, I don't believe it. If you heard that audio, that was just from a few hours ago at the White House. And the consequences are deadly. That's why I wanted to sort of wrap in the lettuce there, because he has been rolling back these regulations, and the consequences are deadly. So what do you think when you hear those pronouncements, when you see them reiterated on the weekend news shows? What goes through your head as somebody who has warned about these things for years, and now we're seeing these things?
Well, you know, I'm looking out the window right now, and it's dark outside. Whatever happened to the sun?
Yes.
It's about his comments about climate change are about as sensible and intelligent as that. I mean, even a five-year-old understands the absurdity of the claims that he makes, the sorts of arguments that he makes. And I'm so glad that you did draw that analogy, both for the very real cost of deregulation, of sort of rampant uninformed deregulation, and the damage that that brings, and the cost that incurs, whether it's in terms of the health costs of this massive E. coli outbreak because of the deregulation of the farming industry, or the unprecedented damage that climate change is doing because of attempts by Trump and fossil fuel interests who run his administration to try to dismantle regulations to preserve the health of the entire planet. And the analogy holds as well, which you touched on, the cost of inaction, the damage that's done by inaction, mm-hmm. is so far greater than the cost of the action in the first place, of the regulations that were in place, whether we're talking about the cost of that disease outbreak, the E. coli outbreak with the romaine lettuce, or the cost that we are seeing, the damage that we're seeing play out in real time now in the form of catastrophic wildfires and superstorms and droughts and floods and heat waves. The analogy is a perfect one. And let's go even beyond the cost of inaction. There's the fact that the rest of the world recognizes that the future of the global economy is going to be in green energy, renewable energy. And China, despite what Trump claimed today, is actually doing far more than we are. They are taking coal-fired power plants offline. They mm-hmm. are investing massively in solar energy technology to the point where they've lowered solar panel costs for the entire world by flooding the market with cheap solar panels. China's doing a lot more than we are in many respects. And so to claim, as the president does, that we can look to other countries as argument for reneging on our commitments to Paris, well, that's hogwash. Every other country in the world is committed to Paris. Most countries are doing far more than we are. There's a little bit of good news in that we have enough states that have enlightened leadership and cities and municipalities and companies that we're actually on a trajectory where we might meet our obligations under Paris, even without Trump, even with Trump dismantling regulations to lower carbon emissions, trying to get rid of the Clean Power Plan and fuel efficiency standards that have helped us lower our carbon emissions, even with the Trump administration doing everything it can to push us in the wrong direction, we'll still probably make our Paris commitments. But here's the problem. Meeting Paris commitments alone doesn't get us to where we need to be. If we're going to stabilize warming below truly catastrophic levels, mm-hmm. We've got to go well beyond the Paris commitments. We need a president who is going to be committed to ratcheting up our obligations in the next major conference of the parties, rather than one who's trying to pull out of a global agreement that every other country is part of.
Michael Mann, let me ask you this. Even if we put these, and you're right, there is some good news in that report, but it is pretty slim pickings, it seems to me, because even if we meet the Paris Climate Accord, the requirements there, we're still in trouble. And even if we put these things in place right now, like basically the three main solutions that were put forward in the report, putting a price on greenhouse gas emissions, a carbon tax or a fee, so to speak, establish government regulations on how much greenhouse pollution can be emitted, and spending public money on clean energy research. Even if we did all of those things right now, obviously we can't, thanks to Trump on a federal level, but would it be, even if we did all of those things we know how to do, would it be enough to mitigate against the worst of the effects that are detailed in this report and many others like it?
Yeah, well, every bit of progress makes a difference. So, you know, too often we simplify sort of how we characterize the impacts of climate change. We make it sound like there's a cliff at 2 degrees Celsius, 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, and mm-hmm. if we warm the planet beyond that point, we fall off a cliff. And it's not like that. It's like a highway, and we're going down this downward-sloping highway, and it's getting more and more treacherous. And, yeah, we might miss the 2 degrees Celsius exit. That doesn't mean we don't do everything we can to get off at the 2.5 degree Celsius exit, because that's better than the 3-degree exit, and that's better than the 4-degree exit. And if you sort of follow, you know, the highway, you know, past all of those exits towards basically business as usual, we do nothing to avert catastrophic climate change, then, yeah, we basically create an unlivable planet for us and for many of the other living things on this planet. So there is still time to take the actions necessary to avert that sort of future. And how bad we're willing to let it get is really, you know, the only decision we have to make at this point is how quickly do we get off that highway? Mm-hmm. And the more we do, the more rapidly we bring down carbon emissions, the earlier that we put a price on carbon and we introduce regulations to get us off carbon, every little bit of action on our part, and that's at the policy level, but it's also individual actions which make a difference as well. Everything we do makes a difference. It helps us get off at that earlier exit, and that's what we have to do.
I've got just a few minutes here with you, Mike, so I want to try to run through a couple of quick points. I saw a response from you on Twitter, I think a week or so ago, to newly elected Progressive Democratic Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. She had tweeted that we have just 10 years left to take action to avoid, quote, cataclysmic climate disaster. You disagreed with her assessment there.
Yeah, and really I was being a bit glib in it, what she
not
meant.
Not you, Mike.
what she was trying to say was absolutely true, that look, if we go 10 more years down this road without bringing down carbon emissions substantially, then yeah, we commit to catastrophic climate change. I was simply concerned that sometimes when you frame it that way, it makes it sound like, hey, we've got 10 years until we start doing something, and that's not the case. We've got to ramp down those carbon emissions dramatically over the next 10 years if we're going to avoid crossing that threshold.
Yeah, I think it's been about the last 10 years I've heard that we have 10 years left. It kind of seems like we're there right around now. Mike, I want to get some quick thoughts from you here on how things... how the media responded. We know that the administration tried to hide this report by releasing it on Friday. How did the media, as far as you saw, were you on a lot of the shows? Were you on Meet the Press? How did that go, the coverage of this go, as far as you could tell over the weekend?
Yeah, I'd like them to rename Meet the Press Be Depressed, because at least this week, the only person they had on the show to talk about the new report was an American Enterprise Institute climate change denier who was clueless about the science, and yet they allowed her to basically filibuster, purveying one climate change denialist myth after another, and Chuck Todd and nobody else on the panel was willing to call them to task, and that's unacceptable.
So there was no scientists? There was only, because that's what I saw, was a whole bunch of deniers. Rick Santorum, I know your good friend, was on one of the shows giving some denialist nonsense. Seemed to be a lack of scientists, people who actually know about this report, talking about this report.
Yeah, it was a mixed bag. I actually spent quite a bit of time doing interviews on the cable news networks, MSNBC, CNN, several interviews on both networks, Fox News, I'm still waiting for your call, NPR and other outlets, BBC, four different BBC shows. CNN, I was just watching it today, I was watching a little bit of MSNBC, there was a lot of good, solid discussion about this hard-hitting report and the urgency that conveys. The problem is in these political Sunday morning shows, and there's a large audience, right, that doesn't watch sort of the 24-hour news cycle on these cable news shows. The only thing they might tune into are those Sunday morning network news programs. And if that's what they were watching, and this is particularly sort of an older, sort of more male demographic that's most likely to be in denial of climate change, those are some of the people we really need to reach. And if all they're seeing are these Sunday morning news shows where the only person invited on to talk about the report is a right-wing think tank climate change denier, well, obviously those networks are doing a real disservice to their viewers and listeners.
What's the bottom line? What should we take away from this report before the next one hits? If there's one thing we can walk away with, one lesson here, Michael Mann, what would that be?
Look, the scientists, very conservative scientists who would rather be left alone in a lab crunching numbers or collecting samples are shouting from the rooftops. That tells us that we don't have any time to waste now. We have to act now.
Dr. Michael Mann, you can find his work at michaelemann.net. He is the Distinguished Professor and Director of the Earth System Science Center at Pennsylvania State University. You can and should buy several of his books for Christmas, The Madhouse Effect, along with cartoonist Tom Tolles, and a children's book that I think was just recently released, if I understand, with Megan Herbert, called The Tantrum That Saved the world. Mike, always great talking to you, my friend. Oh, and follow him on Twitter. Harass him there. He is Michael E. Mann on Twitter. Mike, greatly appreciate you joining us once again today.
You too, Brad. Great talking with you.
All right. Okay, we'll take a quick break and come back with some of your phone calls if you want to talk about this report and all of the other things that didn't get enough coverage as far as I'm concerned over the weekend. Our phone number here is 818-985-5735. If there's anything you saw over the weekend that you feel hasn't received the coverage it deserves, now's the chance to give it some airtime to breathe. Desi Doyen, before we jump to the break here, one of the issues that seem to keep coming up over and over again with the denialists
yes.
on the weekend shows talking about all of this was how these scientists, these climate scientists, they're just in it for the money.
Which is hilarious. If you follow any climate science or scientist or listen to any of them, they will tell you, no, they don't get paid a lot of money for this. And specifically regarding the National Climate Assessment that just came out, they volunteered their time.
What?
They were not paid for this. So anybody who says otherwise is uninformed.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yes.
Not to mention the fact that, you know, the oil companies and the Koch brothers, boy, they'd pay a hell of a lot more money if you were willing to be a scientist and sell your soul to lie and claim that none of this stuff was ever happening.
Exactly.
All right, quick break, and we're back with more Bradcast right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. I'll try to get to some of your calls momentarily at 818-985-5735. But let's see. Before we broke for the holidays last week, we were continuing our nonstop coverage of, yes, the midterm elections, which are still being tallied in various places across the country, challenged, including here in California, where results will not even be certified until sometime next week. Talking about the November 8 election. And as we predicted, the last time I was in last week, as far as counting goes, Democrat Ben McAdams has, in fact, now unseated Republican Congresswoman Mia Love in Utah. The first, by the way, she is the first and only Black Republican woman in Congress. Her bid for re-election in the deep red state of Utah failed, reportedly by a very narrow margin, where the counting stretched on over the past 3 weeks. And today, Congresswoman Love finally offered her official concession. In doing so, she condemned President Trump in a scathing concession speech, describing him as having, quote, no real relationships, just convenient transactions. She used similar language to attack her own party, accusing Republicans of having a transactional relationship with minority and Black voters. Love, who was elected to Congress back in 2014 and had been seen as a rising Republican star because, you know, she was Black, she was a woman, and there's not a lot of either of those in the Republican Party. Nonetheless, she lost her election by less than a percentage point to McAdams, the Democratic mayor of Salt Lake County, her defeat in a district that Trump carried back in 2016 by 7 percentage points. Hands the Democrats yet another seat in the House of Representatives, giving the party 38 additional seats in the midterm elections in their taking the majority of the chamber in January. Ms. Love's harsh words for Trump came in response to remarks that President Trump had made about her nearly 3 weeks ago, the day after the election. During his news conference, his crazy news conference, the day after the midterm election, he mocked Mia Love for losing her race, even though the votes were still being tallied. It was an incredibly close race. He said, Mia Love gave me no love and she lost. Too bad. Sorry about that, Mia. She's the daughter of Haitian immigrants. She's the only Republican woman in the Congressional Black Caucus. She criticized Republicans for how they interact with minority voters. She said, quote, this election experience and these comments shines a spotlight on the problems Washington politicians have with minorities and Black Americans. It's transactional, she said. It's not personal. Because Republicans never take minority communities into their home and citizens into their home and into their hearts, they stay with Democrats and bureaucrats in Washington because they do take them home or at least make them feel like they have a home. She also railed in this concession speech on Monday against the media, Democrats, her opponent. She called a wolf in sheep's clothing. She promised, I'm not going away. But now I am unleashed, I am untethered, and I am unshackled, and I can say exactly what's on my mind. Well, she may be able to say it on Fox News, but she's not going to be able to say it in Congress anymore. She is out. With that victory, as noted, Democrats have picked up 38 House seats in the midterm elections so far. That could still go up to at least 39. There are still two more uncalled seats, both in New York. Democrat Anthony Brindisi is said to be up by 0.8 of a percentage point in his race against incumbent Republican Claudia Tenney in New York's 22nd House District. And in the 27th House District, Republican Congressman Chris Collins, who was indicted recently on a whole bunch of insider trading charges, he is just 0.9 of a point above his Democratic challenger, Nate McMurray, in a very red district in New York, which Donald Trump had won by 25 percentage points in 2016. Now, the indicted Republican is up by just 0.9 of a point as that counting and those challenges continue. Meanwhile, in addition to the counting, all of the voting is not yet over. On Tuesday, Mississippians head to the polls for a runoff in the special U.S. Senate election between the appointed Senator Cindy Hyde Smith. She was appointed to fill the seat of Thad Cochran, who was ailing and resigned from the Senate. So now she has to run for her first actual election in this special U.S. Senate election. She is running against former Democratic Congressman Mike Espy. No one got more than 50% on November 6th. So they are having a runoff on Tuesday. And now this is Mississippi. So the race will likely be won by the Republicans. But who knows? Hyde Smith has had some serious missteps in recent days. And as it turns out, she is not the brightest bulb in the pack. I'll give you one quick example before I go to your calls here. During the same event at which she had made a joke about public hanging, which, by the way, is hysterical in the state of Mississippi, given its history of public hangings, you know, lynchings, the senator misidentified former Congressman Henry Hyde as a senator from Oklahoma. She said, many of you have heard of Senator Henry Hyde from Oklahoma. That was a distant relative, she says, of hers. Her name is Hyde Smith. She says he put in a bill many years ago that could never use federal funding to fund abortions. But the problem is Hyde was not a senator from Oklahoma. He was a congressman from Illinois who helped craft the very well-known Hyde Amendment, which bars the federal government from spending tax money to fund abortions. The video of her remarks follows a series of other missteps, the one about the public hangings. She also talked about vote suppression, telling a number of students she wouldn't mind if they made it a bit harder for liberals to cast a vote, which is also hilarious in post Jim Crow Mississippi. And then there was photos last week that surfaced showing Hyde Smith posing in Confederate soldier garb at a museum honoring Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederacy. It was also revealed in recent days that she attended a whites-only elementary school in the 70s to avoid integration. So we will be watching that race for any surprises akin to what happened, for example, last year in Alabama when Republican Roy Moore lost to now Democratic Senator Doug Jones, or even when Republican Mia Love lost in Utah to a Democrat for the U.S. House. There are other runoffs also, by the way, coming up in Georgia next week for Secretary of State. And a new lawsuit was filed challenging the results from the lieutenant governor's race in that state over the weekend. I hope to cover that interesting lawsuit in detail on tomorrow's thrilling broadcast with the plaintiff in that case. But let me take some quick calls here. Let's go to John in downtown L.A. Hey, John, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, Brad, I love your show.
Thank you, sir.
I'm an ecological civil engineering strategist. That's a mouthful. But I have a number for you that you might want to sit down for, hopefully, though, as he goes next to you to resuscitate to me.
Calculations,
when it comes to this ecological disaster that we are headed for, here's a number for you. $4,864,896,762 trees. And that's just from South America that has to be replaced just during this Iron Age.
John, what is that number? That is a number of what?
That is the number of trees that have been cut down since the industrial age of America's here.
Yep.
And that's just for over here.
Yep.
I have the numbers for various different countries.
Well, don't
we
give them to me because
woefully behind.
Yeah, I know. We don't have time. I was going to say we don't have time for those numbers. We don't have time, period, to keep dallying about this nonsense that this is somehow not going on. It's just incredible. John, I appreciate your thoughts and your concerns, my friend. Let me go to Josh in Hollywood. Hey, Josh, welcome to the... once again, not enough women calling in. I don't know why. Call us up, 818-985-5735. Josh in Hollywood, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
How you doing, Brad?
Oh, well, okay. How are you?
Good, good. I just wanted to shine a little light on the reason that there is even a possibility to doubt climate change. It's obvious that we are totally consuming and polluting and destroying ecological systems and all that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's obvious, yes. But does anybody know that they designed cars that run on water already? In the 80s, Stanley Meyer, he designed a car run on water. He patented it internationally, and they offered him $1 billion to shelf his invention, and he refused it. So then he dies of an aneurysm, mysteriously. You know, I mean, this is what happens when the engineers come up with real free energy. Of course, they don't want us collecting rainwater and powering our cars. But no one talks about this, you know, and this is why we can doubt it, because we don't have to be polluting. We could be having free energy. We could have cars on water, but the government don't want that. So,
well, at the very least, we could have had electric. We did have electric vehicles decades ago. GM had a great car that everyone loved, the EV1, I think it was, and suddenly they pulled it off the shelves. For some reason that is discussed in Who Killed the documentary, a great documentary, Who Killed the Electric Car. I mean, now we're all excited about Teslas and everything, but decades ago, we could have and should have been doing this.
So these Rockefellers and these people who, you know, control the quote-unquote fossil fuel, which they make it sound like it's scarce. It's not really. But I'm just going to tell you, the reason that no one knows is because what does Princeton, Yale, Harvard, Brown, all those Wales University, what do they all have in common?
What's that?
Those are all elite family names, okay? Mm-hmm. That's all I wanted to say.
All right. Thanks, Josh. I appreciate that call. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. 818-985-KPFK. I know a lot of you want to get in on this. Anything else on your mind? We'll take it. We got a hell of a lot going on today, but I'd rather hear from you. We have a denier calling in, Des? All right, we'll consider whether we'll hear from that denier after this. We'll take a quick break here. We'll come back with that, more of your calls, and some more news that I got. 818-985-5735. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is The Bradcast.
Ooh, I'm a rebel just for kicks now.
Welcome back to The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. For some reason, that song always cheers me up. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Some good news before we go back to the phones here. The massive wildfire that killed dozens of people and destroyed thousands of homes in Northern California has now finally been fully contained, after burning for more than 2 weeks, according to authorities on Sunday. This is the nation's deadliest wildfire in at least a century. It ended up killing, so far, at least 85 people. Some of the good news is that we are down to less than 250 people on the list of those unaccounted for. That number had been as high as 2,000 a week or so ago. Officials say that the drop in that number is that they were able to confirm that, in fact, a lot of these people on this list were, in fact, alive. So good news there, although still about 250 unaccounted for 2 weeks after these fires began on November 8th. Up in Northern California, where they burned about 240 square miles, destroying the entire town of Paradise in just one day. Nearly 19,000 buildings, most of them homes, are now gone in that Northern California fire. Down here in Southern California, residents returned to areas that were evacuated in a fire near Malibu. That is now being repopulated again. At the height of the fire, some 250,000 had fled their homes. Three people died down in Southern California in the fires down here. More than 1,600 buildings, most of them homes, were destroyed, according to officials. And Donald Trump today says, yeah, he doesn't believe the extraordinary cost of climate change that is warned about, that could be twice as high, twice as big of a loss to the economy as the Great Recession. Donald Trump doesn't believe it, even though his own administration released that report over the weekend. And by the way, he's also, all of this is going on as he's sending, he had sent, what, something like 5,000, more than 5,000 troops down to the U.S. border. 5,000 troops down there. Meanwhile, there are 19,000 people in Northern California who have lost their homes. Wouldn't it be nice if we sent the troops to help build some housing for these people? It's getting cold and rainy up there in Northern California this time of year. And yet, all weekend long, the media, not just the right-wing media, but the media overall, was obsessed with whatever Donald Trump tells them is going on the border. Let's go to Berna, where we are here. Berna in Montecito. Hey, Berna, welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a resident of Montecito. I think most people in California are aware of the fire and debris slide that we had recently.
Yep.
After that, we started a project called Recovery Foundation, and we opened a free store for all of the people who suffered in the Carpinteria and Ojai, the related areas. Now, Recovery Project being opened in Malibu.
Mm-hmm.
And it's being opened in the Country Mart in Malibu.
Okay.
And it is for that area and anybody that can get to it. The clothing is for men, women, and they're starting to collect children's clothing. It's all free. It's all from neighbors. It's all neighbors wanting to help neighbors.
Mm.
You can go online and find it. There is a website that was starting up, but you can also find it by going to the Recovery Project website. And this is, you know, it's something that's so important because it allows not only the people who are in dire need right now, and as you said, they don't even have housing, but it allows those people to get what they need, and it allows people who want to give to have an access that's immediate and grassroots and transparent. They can see it right there helping their neighbor.
Thank you. Thanks for letting us know about that, Anna. I'm looking up. I'm trying to figure out where the website is. I guess we would just point people to go to Google and look up Recovery Project if you want to help that effort.
Yes, Recovery Project. And it's the Malibu Free Store.
All right.
It's in the Country Mart in Malibu. And it's three of the local women in Malibu who have taken this up. They communicated to us in Montecito to be their mentors. And they started up. And they need donations. And they need to get the word out to people who are in need to come in there, and they will help them.
Thank you, Berna. I greatly appreciate you calling in to help get that word out for the Recovery Project. And, of course, my thanks to you. Thank you to those people who are mounting that effort. I drove through Montecito over the holiday weekend, and there are still yards, just devastation there still from that mudslide, which I think was a year away, the mudslide, boulder slide that people heard about because it threatened Oprah's house, but it's still a mess there. So I greatly appreciate folks stepping forward. All right, let me get through a bunch of folks here very quickly. Norma in Cerritos. Hey, Norma, welcome to the broadcast.
Yes. Hi, Brad. Can you hear me?
I can more than hear you. Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. It is so frustrating to see the slow pace of the mass media reporting on climate change. I thought for sure now with this report that just came out on Black Friday, I thought for sure now we're going to, you know, get the attention that this serious topic deserves. But instead, CNN was bad-mouthing Fox, poor coverage of it, instead of getting into the depth of the report. And LA Times, I couldn't understand why LA Times didn't address this horrible tweet by Trump over the, you know, over the cold climate of the New York parade. They didn't quite address that, even though, you know, that could sway people to not understand, you know, climate change, global warming, because it was so so cold in New York for the parade. So what are we supposed to do with our mass media to get them, you know, to cover this topic seriously?
You know, I don't know what to do. I know that you should complain and you should call them and write them and do whatever you can to try to get them to do the right thing. But after having, after being in this business for this many years and seeing the mainstream corporate media fail over and over and over again, in truth, the best thing you can do is support independent media. Support, if you're listening on KPFK or you're, you know, listening to us or any of the stations that carry the broadcast or the others, we need to support alternative media because, you know, if it wasn't for, frankly, people like Desi Doyen on our own Green News Report, you know, going back 10 years at this point, yelling and screaming about these climate problems that we're only now sort of hearing about in the mainstream media. If it wasn't for the alternative media, there would be no media at all, I think.
I hear you, Dad. And I have been supporting. So thank you for the
job. I appreciate that, Norma. Thank you very much. All right, let me get to this denier very quick. And then, Mo, hang in there, buddy. I'm getting to you as well. Warren in Mar Vista. Hey, Warren, you are a climate denier and say climate change is not possible?
No.
Oh.
I don't object to recognizing that temperature is rising and that ice is melting and storms are getting worse. My objection is to blaming it on greenhouse gases, making it a human-caused problem, as opposed to recognizing the source is somewhere else.
Where is the source?
I think it's God letting the world people know they're doing a horrible job at being good stewards.
And your evidence that it is God, Warren?
My evidence that it is God would take an extremely long time to present, but basically that life has taught me that every limitation that is experienced by any human being is a disciplinary hint from God suggesting to them their opportunities they're avoiding.
Now, Warren, it says here on the call screen that you're a physician, you're a doctor?
Yes, I have an MD degree.
So you're a scientist, and yet you...
1977.
Yeah, and yet you see all of these thousands and tens of thousands of scientists giving you actual scientific evidence saying that this is what is causing it, and you say, no, that's not it. It's probably God, even though I don't have any actual evidence for it.
Well, I have lots of evidence, but it's not physical. It's not the physical evidence. If you're not willing to open your mind and begin to see things on a level of subtlety, you're not going to be able to see that it is God. But you can't see anything as being proven if you simply limit yourself to what you can detect with your five senses.
Okay, well, I'll go with the sixth sense, I guess, Warren. But until then, I think I prefer the science.
Can I give you two facts?
Unfortunately, you can't because I got to get out. I got one more caller I promised to get to. But Desi types in to say, who is it, Catherine Hayhoe? Dr. Catherine Hayhoe. She's an evangelical climate scientist who explains how to make sense of climate change, even for believers, Warren.
Evangelicals are false Christians, so
right.
It's reasonable that one of them would believe in the Orthodox approach.
Okay. Thanks, Warren. I do appreciate hearing from you, and I'm sorry I have to give you the bums rush here at the top of the hour, but I do want to get to our old friend Morris in Long Beach. Hey, Mo, welcome to the broadcast, my friend.
Brad, all that brother had to do was quote the book of Revelations, which is the prophecy of Jesus Christ. But I'm going to tell you how we can stop the prophecy of Jesus Christ. What we got to do is pay $1 trillion, and buy out the fossil fuel industry. I talked to one of your hosts about this some time ago. Just go on and buy them out because they are a detriment to the world. $1 trillion will buy out the fossil fuel industry in the world.
Where are we going to come up with that $1 trillion, Mo?
Well, Brad, I know you got the money. You and Desi got plenty of money in your offshore account. You got some over there in Sweden, too. You can't fool me, Brad. Talk to you later.
That's true. Thanks, Mo. I appreciate it. That's true. Us independent folks, media folks, do make trillions of dollars that we hide offshore. Barbara in Camarillo responds to caller Warren to say, quote, it's a cruel man who believes in a cruel God. All right, Barbara. All of those thoughts are appreciated and welcome, but I got to get out until tomorrow's broadcast. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to our board operator today, D'Angelo Jones, to my guest, Dr. Michael Mann of Penn State Earth System Science Center, and to you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. Drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. And on the Facebooks and the Twitters, I hope you will find, follow, and share me there. I am simply The Brad Blog. That's it. Until we meet again tomorrow, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.